Good morning, everyone. How many of you tuned into what you actually sang in verse 3? Let sorrow do its work, sin, grief, and pain. Sweet are thy messengers, sweet their refrain. Maybe I can convince you that that's more than just poetry in the message today. Okay, before I start, I got a question for children about 12 and under. Who is your favorite Bible character, your favorite Bible story? Anybody want to answer that? Nobody brave enough to speak up. Well, I'll tell you what mine is. My favorite Bible character is Joseph. And we're going to see if we can learn some lessons today from the life of Joseph. Now, I suppose everybody here knows the story. So let me ask you this question. Who would like their life to end up like Joseph's did? He's probably the most honored man. Well, I don't know if he's honored more than the Pharaoh or not, but even the Pharaoh, I think, looked up to him. Basically, the most honored man in that part of the world. And even more important than that, God has his hand, a blessing on him, and God approves of him. I mean, you couldn't end up much better than Joseph did. Now, I'm not promoting the idea that you'd all like to be the president or anything like that, but just take the basic thought. He ended up very well. So, if we would like to end up the way Joseph did, maybe we should take a close look at the way Joseph lived. Okay, starting in Genesis 37, the first thing it tells you about Joseph, about his character, it mentions his birth before this, but the first thing it tells us about his character, let's read verse 1 and 2. And Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. The impression I get out of that is the boys were doing, saying, I don't know what, something that wasn't good, and Joseph didn't go along with it. He went and told his father about it. The first thing we hear about Joseph is his integrity. He recognized sin, and he didn't go along with it. So maybe I'll speak to the younger ones, maybe to the boys, adolescent boys. How do you do on this point? Boys can get into foolishness. Do you just go right along with the foolishness? Or do you recognize that this isn't right and I'm not going to join in this? If we want to end up like Joseph did, this is one thing we're going to have to get right. If we can't stand up for what's right, forget the rest. Choose to stand up for what's right. In Proverbs 1:10, common verse, says, my son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. In other words, don't go along with it. Okay, let's continue on reading here. Now Israel, verse 3, now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. He was like 91 or something when Joseph was born. And he made him a coat of many colors. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. Just a note to the parents. Was this wise of Jacob to select? I mean, maybe that's the kind of the culture, the way it was back then, but realistically, I don't know that that was a good idea to favor one son like that. So just a thought. Continue on reading here. And Joseph dreamed a dream. And he told it his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, probably like harvesting the wheat or the barley or whatever. And lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And behold, your sheaves stood round about and made obeisance to my sheaf. In other words, they stood all around it and bowed down. That's the picture I get. In fact, some other translations might say bowed down. I don't know. And his brethren said unto him, shalt thou indeed reign over us? See, you bow down to a king or ruler. Or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. Now, my question to you is, what does it mean when it says, and for his words? They hated him because of this dream and
for his words. What words? What was he saying? What do you think? What was he saying? Let's have your ideas, Simeon. Okay, it doesn't specify. That's not actually what I was thinking of, though, and it doesn't make it real clear, but does anyone else have an idea? It says, and for his words, right after he told him about the dream. Wayne. Okay. The thought I had was, the dream was self-explanatory. You couldn't miss it. The brothers got it, and I think Joseph got it. So did he possibly tell them what he thought it meant? You know, sometimes as youth, we can be a little overzealous and a little unwise. Did he say what he thought the dream meant? That's where I'm going. That's the idea I'm building on here. Sometimes in youth. Okay, let me first of all ask you this question. Supposing that's what he said. He told his brothers what he thought the dream meant. That maybe they should respect him a little more, who knows what. Was it a sin for him to say that? Was it a sin for him to tell them the dream and for him to say what he thought maybe it meant? Hardly. You can't really say he sinned in that. But was it wise? He knew the relationship with the brothers wasn't real good. So that was unwise. The point I'm making is we need to get beyond just, well, there's nothing wrong with this. We need to also ask ourselves the question, especially if someone approaches us about something, you know, is this wise? We got to get beyond just, well, it's not sin. Okay, it was unwise, and it cost Joseph dearly. Well, it was among the things that cost him dearly. Now, I'd like to go on a little rabbit trail here and look at another instance where a young man did something that was not wise. Again, was it technically sin? Certainly wasn't wise. And I want to read it. 1 Kings 12, 4 to 11. This is the account of Rehoboam. Let me not get these two names mixed up. Rehoboam, son of Solomon. After Solomon died, they were going to make him king. So they came to him. The people came to him to make him king. And they ask a request of him. Okay, that is in 1 Kings 12, starting at verse 4. Okay, the people said to him, "Thy father made our yoke grievous. Now therefore make thou the grievous service of thy father and his heavy yoke which he put upon us lighter, and we will serve thee." And he said unto them, "Depart ye for 3 days, then come again to me." And the people departed. And King Rehoboam consulted with the old men that stood before Solomon his father while he yet lived, and said, "How do ye advise that I answer this people?" And they spake unto him, saying, "If thou be a servant unto this people this day, and wilt serve them, and answer them, and speak good words to them, then they will be thy servants forever." But he forsook the counsel of the old men, which they had given him, and consulted with the young men that were grown up with him, in other words, his friends, I guess, and which stood before him. And he said unto them, "What counsel give ye, that we may answer this people, who have spoken to me, saying, Make the yoke which thy father did put upon us lighter?" And the young men that were grown up with him spake unto him, saying, "Thus shall ye speak unto this people that spake unto thee, saying, Thy father made our yoke heavy, but make thou it lighter unto us. Thus shalt thou say unto them, My little finger shall be thicker than my father's loins. And now, whereas my father did laid you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father hath chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions." In other words, he was saying that he's going to be just as strict as his father. He's going to be stricter, going to be harder. He's not going to reduce the taxes or whatever it was. Now, we look at that, and we think, what? Okay, that's the way he answered the people then, and most of the tribes just rebelled against him. And we look at that and we say, did the guy have no brains? But let's just stop and think. Again, the Bible doesn't make it clear what their train of thought was, but I'm going to ask you to consider that the young men had a logical train of thought in what they were saying. So let's just suppose the idea, what they were thinking, was you can't let the people push you around. They're asking you to reduce the taxes. What are they going to ask for next? You're the king. You got to take authority. You got to let them know who's boss. Now, it doesn't say that specifically, but was that possibly their train of thought? So The young men had ideas, what they thought would be the good thing. But the old men had experience. Let's be careful to not despise the counsel of old men. Okay, now back from the rabbit trail, let's get back to Joseph. That may not have been sin for Rehoboam, but it was none wise. So that's my main point. We have to use wisdom, not just think, well, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, it's not sin. Okay, now he also had another dream, and he went and told his brothers that one as well. Why he did that when they were upset with him the first time, I don't know. But it does say this about his brothers in verse 11, and his brethren envied him. Just a thought I want to bring out of that is, this is life. There's going to be times when someone else seems to have things going for them, and we don't. That's life. Just, we got to accept it. Okay, verse 12 to 14. And Israel, Jacob, said to Joseph, do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Your brothers are feeding the sheep over at Shechem. Come, and I will send thee unto them. And he said unto him, here am I. And he said to him, go, I pray thee, see whether it be well with thy brethren and well with the flocks, and bring me word again. So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. Now, we may read over that and not think a thing of it, but I'm going to suggest to you there was a reason why his father was sending him to Shechem. They had some baggage in the closet from years past. Shechem is where two of Jacob's sons, the incident with Jacob's daughter, Dinah, and the, I forget what the prince's name of Shechem was, but two of Jacob's sons went and killed all the men in Shechem. They took a bunch of people captive and whatever, but there was apparently still people living at Shechem now. And so they did this back then, and now was Jacob a little worried, you know, them people probably aren't real friendly to us over there, you know, better go see how the boys are doing. There's no trouble. The lesson I want to get out of that is, let's live our lives in such a way that we don't let baggage behind us. Romans 12, 18 says, if it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Let's try to keep it peace with everyone. I said this story before, but I'll say it again because it kind of fits here very well. Years ago, my boss built a silo for a farmer, and the fellow wasn't paying for it, and paid a little bit, and just dragging it on and on, wasn't paying for it. One day, my boss's wife called him and says, we need money for payroll. You know, she wants him to pay his bill. And he just kind of laughed it off, you know. But my boss just kind of was patient with him, and just eventually the bill got settled up, and everything was fine. All in the past. Time goes on, and my boss bought a property up in Brickerville. And the property had been approved for there was a business there, but it was approved for, you know, to commercial for a business to be there. But the other business moved out, this property got sold, and then the laws changed for the requirements, like room for truck turning around, you know, all that stuff. So now my boss bought it, and he wants to put his business in there. And, well, they want to go by the new codes. And he said, well, it already got approved. It's been approved. Why can't we just go by that? And one person on the township is like, was there room to tractor trailer truck to turn around in there? And who do you suppose one of the other people on the township was? This farmer. Now, if he'd have left a bad taste in that farmer's mouth, yeah, whatever, had treated him wrong, to try to get any favors out of this township would have been no deal. But the farmer probably knew that he kind of treated him bad. And so when this one township person says, this can a tractor trailer turn around, this farmer says, ah, there's all kinds of room there. And went through, no problem. He has his business there. That little bit of hassle over money saved my boss thousands, probably. So just kind of reinforces the idea of let's not let baggage behind us. Okay. So Joseph went to, you know the story here, Joseph went to find his brethren. He eventually found them. They saw him coming, threw him into, well, they said, you know, we're way, way far away from home. Dad's nowhere around. This is our chance to get rid of him. And Reuben spoke up, and so they didn't actually kill him. They just threw him into a pit. And then along comes this caravan. Thought, hey, here's a good idea. Let's sell him. Then we're rid of him, and we got some money in the deal yet. Maybe I should read it here, starting at verse 26. And Judah said unto his brethren, what profit is it if we slay our brother and cover his blood? Come, and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him. For he is our brother and our flesh. And his brethren were content. Then there passed by Midianites merchantmen, and they drew up and lifted up Joseph out of the pit, and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph to Egypt. So apparently the Ishmaelites and the Midianites were traveling together. Now, again, we can read over that and not really quite catch all that was said there. Who were the Ishmaelites? They were the descendants of Ishmael. Now, let's do a little genealogy here. So Abraham begat Isaac and Ishmael, their brothers. Isaac begat Jacob, and Ishmael begat his sons, their cousins. You jump another generation to Joseph and their second cousins. Now, Joseph was born when Jacob was fairly old, so there may have been another jump on Ishmael's side. But anyway, this is family. And the Midianites, you know, Jacob had, I'm not sure how many sons. After Sarah died, he had another concubine, and one of his sons was Midian. So the same thing. The Midianites could have been his second cousins as well. So the brothers are selling it to other people. My point is, humans are capable of doing some pretty horrendous things. Have you ever been the victim of someone else's sinfulness? Reading Jesus' words out of Matthew. Matthew 6, starting at verse 14. For if ye forgive men their trespasses, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if ye forgive not men their trespasses, neither will your Father forgive your trespasses. Does that command seem unreasonable? This is not only holiness, it is also for our own good. You've probably all heard this story. I'm not sure where it comes from. It was supposed to be a dream or what it was, about the man who had someone he needed to forgive. It was a fellow in a cage, and God was telling him to open the cage. And when he finally opened it, he walked out of the cage himself. Was that a dream, or where did that story come from? I'm sure some of you have heard it before. I'm not sure where it comes from. But anyway, the thought is true. When we forgive, we set ourselves free. A couple thoughts on forgiveness. Forgiveness is not denying that you were sinned against. Now, I'm not promoting making mountains out of molehills, but just the thought. People do sin against us. Forgiving does not mean that we have to kind of deny and say, oh, it was nothing, it was no sin. No, people do sin against us, and we don't need to deny that. In the parable that Jesus gave about the man that owed 10,000 talents, and the other fellow, he was forgiven, then the other fellow owed him 100 pence. 100 pence was 100 days' wages. There was a debt, and it's teaching about forgiveness, so there was something to forgive. Jesus is not denying that. The point is, other people's debt to us is way less than our debt to God. Okay, forgiveness is not denying that you were sinned against. Forgiveness does not mean that you forget it. We have this saying, forgive and forget, and that's the ideal, if we can forget it. But literally forgetting it may not be possible, depending on how you were sinned against. So forgiveness does not mean that you just automatically forget it. You may remember it for your entire life. My wife was reading a book. The title of the book was Forgiving What You Can't Forget. Forgiveness does not mean you trust the person. There are certain things where, well, right up front, you don't just automatically trust the person. Now, the forgetting and the trusting, if we can get to that point, that's the ideal. But right up front, it does not automatically mean that you trust the person. We want to give second chances, but depending what the sin was. And last of all, forgiveness. Okay, forgiveness doesn't mean you trust. So what is forgiveness? And the best way I can explain it, forgiveness is releasing the debt. It's letting the offense go. They sinned against us, but we're letting it go. Releasing the debt. And that kind of goes along with what Jesus said in that parable about a literal debt. Okay, let's jump over to chapter 39 in Genesis, starting at verse 1. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt. and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. To the human eye, it's just random chance. But this is not random chance. Even though you can see God nowhere in the picture, and it seems like God has forgotten Joseph, God is still moving. Someone came up with a saying, while the devil was raging, God was quietly going about his work. And there's some truth in that. Okay, verse 2 to 6. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him. And he made him overseer over his house. And all that he had, he put into his hand. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hands, and he knew not aught that he had save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well-favored. So Joseph could have made the choice to mope in a corner, been treated wrong, God don't care, and just maybe the story would have ended there. But Joseph is faithful, and God is faithful to Joseph. Just again illustrating forgiveness is for our own good. I'm going to suggest that at this point already he had kind of left go of what his brothers had done and went on with life. Okay, jumping down to verse 10. Okay, you know the story. Potiphar's wife started casting her eyes on him, and Joseph would not go along with her. Verse 10, it came to pass as she spake to Joseph day by day that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. Or to be with her. Joseph did not flirt with temptation. He made it a point to not even be around her. For example, does anyone have the attitude, I don't need a blocker on my internet. I should be strong enough to take care of it myself. I don't need accountability. I sat with a boy in the prayer room at Bible school a couple years ago. He used to go to one of our churches. And when they were going through this thing about accountability and everything, he basically laughed at it. Well, he wasn't laughing at it. He was in sin. In fact, he himself initiated getting his phone blocked right then. I didn't say it. He was quite willing to do it. Well, I don't remember exactly what I said to him, but he was on board to get his phone locked. I may be able to resist when I'm feeling strong, but how about the day when everything has gone wrong? And then you come home and, well, your wife had everything go wrong too. And so you come home and things aren't going well, good at home either, and your level of resistance just isn't real high. And that's the time for Satan to tempt you. That's something we have agreed on as a church, but just the whole principle. Let's cut off the opportunity for sin. 1 Corinthians 10:12 says, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. Now, there's another lesson we can take out of this whole thing here. It's nice to have others around us, that we keep each other accountable, help each other do what's right, help each other stand strong. It's nice, and that's God designed the church that we speak into each other's lives that way. But the time may come when you have to stand on your own two feet, so to speak. Like Joseph here, nobody's around. Nobody that knows him is going to know if he does this or not. So what was Joseph's secret to standing strong when he was tempted and he was alone? Verse 9 gives the answer. He's talking to her, saying, there's none greater, da-da-da-da, because I'm his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Joseph didn't do what he did because he was worried Dad would find out. He knew that this is an issue between him and God is watching. Okay, continue on here. So Potiphar comes home. She falsely accuses him to Potiphar, and Joseph gets thrown in prison. It came to pass when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, after this manner did thy servant unto me, that his wrath was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him in the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. And he was there in the prison. So have you ever been falsely accused? Matthew 5:11 says, "Blessed are you when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake." And also I want to read out of 1 Peter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2, starting at verse 20. "For what glory is it if when ye be buffeted for your faults, ye shall take it patiently? But if when ye do well and suffer for it, ye take it patiently, this is acceptable with God." So in other words, you did well, you're suffering for it, you've got God's approval. So I got God's approval. But what about me? I'm suffering and I'm falsely accused. So God appreciates what I'm doing, but what about me? Let's read the rest. Verse 21. "For even hereunto were ye called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that ye should follow his steps, who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth, who when he was reviled, reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judgeth righteously." And that's as far as I was going to read. "Committed himself to him that judgeth righteously." And I'd like to turn over to Psalms 37. Psalms 37, verse 28. It says, "For the Lord loveth judgment and forsaketh not his saints." That's what it says in King James. Now, if you read it in another translation, it might say, "The Lord loves justice." God loves justice. He does not like to see his children treated unjustly. Think of it in the case of Jesus. Sometimes you have to wait for God to work it out. But God has now declared that Jesus is king forever. Okay, so that's what happened to Jesus. What about us? Well, life is not fair, but God is. It talks different times in the Psalms about waiting. Wait on the Lord. Wait on the Lord. And that's what Joseph is going to have to do. Okay. Verse 21, "But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison." So God's still with him. He's been treated unjustly, and God's not done yet, but he's taken care of him along the way. All right, he's there in prison. Don't know how long he was there, when who should come to prison but the king's butler and baker. And again, I don't know how long they were in prison until one night they both had a dream. Joseph comes in the next morning and sees that they're kind of glum, and, "Well, what's wrong?" "Well, we both had a dream." And they tell Joseph the dream, and Joseph tells the butler that he's going to get his job back. And, well, that's good news. But he asks a favor of him when he's back with the king. Now, think of what's going through Joseph's mind at this point. "This man's going to go to the king. I can get a message to the king. Maybe I can get out of here myself." So, you know, the hope starts rising in Joseph. He says, "But think on me when it shall be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that they should put me into the dungeon." So, finally, after 11 years, Joseph's seeing light at the end of the tunnel. Well, 3 days later, it happened right like Joseph said. The baker got hanged. The butler went back to the king again. But verse 23 says, "Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgat him." And Joseph sat in prison another 2 years. He's now been in Egypt 13 years. Now, if I had been Joseph, or you, what might I have been thinking of after these 13 years? By the way, did you ever have something happen in life where it looked like God's working something out? It seems like God is in this, and then the whole thing just falls flat. There's a proverb that says, "Hope deferred maketh the heart sick." Anyway, so what would I have been thinking after this, being mistreated, forgotten? Well, it's my brother's fault. I would have had a good life if they hadn't messed it up. It's Potiphar's wife's fault. Things were going good, and she messed it up. It's Pharaoh's fault. He has everything he wants. He doesn't care about me. Remember, he didn't know that the butler had forgotten to tell Pharaoh. You know, we're capable of falsely accusing others ourselves, in our thoughts at least. Hebrews 12:15 says, talks about the root of bitterness. How does that go? "Lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled." Something like that. Don't let the root of bitterness take root in you. We once had a root in our garden that was deep-seated. It was thistles. You could pull all the thistles out, and they just grew up again. The root was still there. Till it up, pull them out. A little later, there's more thistles growing. You know what it took to get rid of them? Zero tolerance. I tilled the whole thing up, and I kept watch. Every time it came up, I pulled one out. Well, eventually, the root had to die. And maybe that's the way to get rid of the root of bitterness in us. Zero tolerance. We may not dwell on what was done to us. We have to... Zero tolerance. Okay, where was I at here? Okay, so in these different things I said, the brothers messed it up. Potiphar's wife messed it up. Pharaoh messed it up. What's the mindset? What is the underlining thinking that goes with this? Is it, I am entitled to a good life? Most everyone's having a good life. You know, I should be having a good life, and circumstances and people are messing up my good life. This isn't fair. So Joseph is sitting here. Seems like nobody cares. It seems like God doesn't care. I have a poem here I'd like to read. This was written on the Daniel and Lion's Den picture, but the thought it's teaching fits here very well. As far as circumstances look for Joseph, he's going to be in prison for the rest of his life. Is thy God able? Thou servant of the living God, whilst lions round thee roar, look up and trust and praise his name and all his ways adore. For even now, in peril dire, he works to set thee free. And in a way known but to him shall thy deliverance be. Dost wait while lions round thee stand? Dost wait in gloom alone? And looking up above thy head, see but a sealed stone? Praise in the dark, yea, praise his name, who trusted thee to see his mighty power displayed again. For thee, his saint, for thee, thou servant of the living God, thine but to wait and praise. The living God himself shall work. To him thine anthem raise. Though undelivered, thou dost wait. The God who works for thee, when his hour strikes, will with a word set thee forever free. Well, we have the saying, the darkest hour is just before dawn. And I guess that's scientifically true, according to what I hear. But anyway, finally after 13 years, the hour has come. Hang on, is there something else I wanted to go over here first? Yeah, I'm not quite ready for that yet. First, I want to ask this question. Where in the Bible does God promise a good or easy life? Now, it talks about him giving us richly all things to enjoy, but I don't think he ever promised a good life / easy life. We live in a world that is under the curse, and if you have been given life, troubles are part of the package. It's a guarantee. Now, what happens is we don't all get our troubles at the same time, and we can't really see often what troubles another person's going through. So it seems like I've got all the troubles and everyone else, things are going great. Well, that's not so. There's others going through things you don't see, and there's others who are not, it isn't time for them to go through their troubles. Maybe they already went through them, maybe their troubles are still coming. But we are all in the same boat. In John 16:33, at the Last Supper, Jesus talked about, let me read that verse. John chapter 16:33. These things I have spoken unto you, that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. And now I'd like to flip back to Revelations, the letter to the seven churches, starting in Revelations 2:7. After the letter to the first church, he says, he that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith to the churches. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the tree of life. Jumping to verse 11. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith to the churches. He that overcometh shall not be hurt of the second death. Verse 17. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the hidden manna. Verse 26, he that overcometh and keepeth my words unto the end, to him will I give power over the nations. Chapter 3, verse 5, he that overcometh, the same shall be clothed in white raiment. Are you getting the point? Verse 12, he that overcometh will I make a pillar in the temple of my God. And one more, verse 21, to him that overcometh will I grant to sit with me in my throne. So, how do you overcome if there's nothing to overcome? Seems a little difficult. you will have something to overcome. And by the way, overcome means overcome God's way. I mean, if there's someone opposing you, it doesn't mean beating him up and overcoming him like that. Overcoming God's way, rising above temptation, rising above the thing that is pushing you down, and learning to walk in peace and trust in the Lord. Okay, so the time has come. God's timing has come for Joseph. And Pharaoh has a dream. No one can interpret it. But God made sure the butler remembered then that there's a fellow back in prison that can interpret it. And he remembers, oops, I forgot. And he tells Pharaoh about it. Joseph comes, interprets the dream, says there's going to be 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. And Pharaoh says to his wise men, who can we find that's wiser than this, that has the Spirit of God in it? And he puts him from prison to the throne. Now, if that wasn't in the Bible and you wrote a fiction book where that happened, that would be so fiction that it was unbelievable. But this is fact. God loves justice. And the time has come for him to set the record straight. Do you believe that God is all-powerful? This is something that just doesn't happen. You don't take someone out of prison to set him on the throne. Now, Joseph has been in Egypt 13 years so far. So he went through 13 years of suffering. And he would be 30 years old. He was 17 when the story started. He was 30 years old right now, is what it says. Do you know how old he was when he died? Do you know how old? He was 110. 110 minus 30 is 80 years. God rewarded him 80 years of power, of everyone thinking he's the greatest, for those 13 years that he suffered. God loves justice. Now, I don't know if he was on the throne up to his death. Years later, when his father died, it's obvious that he's very influential yet, so it's quite likely he was in power and looked up to right up to his death. Okay, a couple more verses here. James 5:11 says, behold, we count them happy which endure. Ye have heard of the patience of Job, you know the story of Job and his suffering, and have seen the end of the Lord. Again, with Job, God rewarded him at the end, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy. 2 Peter 1:4 talks about God's exceeding great and precious promises. Do I believe God's exceeding great and precious promises, or do I just quote them? Just because you can quote them doesn't mean that you're actually taking a hold of them for yourself. If God said it, it's true. Let's grab a hold of it. Is it too much to believe that God cares for as much for you as he did for Joseph? In 1 Timothy 6:12, it says, I was going to quote that by memory, and I can't get it straight. Oh, fight the good fight of faith. I think that's the verse. It tells us to fight the good fight of faith. Let's believe God. Now, faith and obedience walk hand in hand. Let's remember that. And unbelief and disobedience walk hand in hand. And one more verse from Jeremiah. Jeremiah 29:11. It says, for I know the thoughts that I think toward you, saith the Lord. Thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end. Another translation will say, to give you a future and a hope. God said that after he told them, Israelites, that they're going to be in Babylon for 70 years. But even though he's going to take them through hard times, that's not his end goal. He has good thoughts toward them. Okay, let's be among the faithful. Now jumping to 41, verse 50 and 51. So they have 7 years of plenty. Joseph stores up food. 7 years of famine came around, 2 years into the famine, back in the land of Canaan, they finally get hungry enough that Jacob sends 10 of his sons to get food. And they came and bowed down to Joseph. Actually, hang on, I'm not ready for that yet. Before that happened, Joseph was given a wife there in Egypt, and he had two sons. And Joseph were born two sons before the years of famine came, which Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bare unto him. And Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God, said he, hath made me forget all my toil and my father's house. Manasseh, I guess, means forget. Now let me ask you, did he literally forget it? In a literal sense, he forgot that he was a Hebrew, he forgot the land of Canaan? I don't think so, but he forgot the pain. All that, the hard things he went through, God just kind of was washing it away. I've been through some things through mental turmoil. And one day, talking to another man that had gone through mental turmoil, he made a comment about it being like hell on earth. Now, okay, granted, that's not literally an accurate comment, but mental turmoil is not a fun thing to go through. But today I can say that God is causing me to forget. We serve a faithful Lord. Okay, let's jump to chapter 42, verse 21. Okay, the brothers came, and Joseph is treating them roughly. I guess he wants to test them first. And they said one to another, "We are verily guilty." So what came to their mind when these bad things started happening? "We are verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw his anguish of his soul, when he besought us, and we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come upon us." And Reuben answered them, saying, "Spake I not unto you, saying, do not sin against the child, and ye would not hear? Therefore, behold, also his blood is required." In other words, they think God, fate, whatever, they're blaming it on, I don't know, that this is happening because of what they did. Is anyone here haunted by some hidden sin? There's a verse that says, "He that covereth his sin shall not prosper, but whosoever confesseth and forsaken shall have mercy." Confessing, sometimes just bringing it out to the open, dealing with, that's the way to get set free. It's the way from the guilt. Now, what did Joseph say to his brothers when he revealed himself to them? They came back the second time, and that's when he revealed himself to them. In verse 45, chapter 45, starting at verse 4. So he told all the other Egyptians to go out so he can reveal himself to his brothers in private. And Joseph said unto his brothers, "Come near to me, I pray you." And they came near, and he said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. Now therefore, be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me thither. For God did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in the which there shall be neither earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God." Seriously? Well, it's obvious that Joseph has forgiven. That's one thing sure, if he can say that. But there's a thought in this, by the way, for hidden sin, there's forgiveness available. Let's bring it to the light. Romans 8:28 says, "All things work together for good to them that love God, to them that are called." In other words, for the Christian, for God's children, everything works together for good. If God allowed it in your life, he wants to use it for good. Let's not get in his way. Let's keep trusting him through the troubles. And the story of Joseph is a great testimony of God's power. Now, I'd like to end with one more poem here. It says, "Things don't just happen, they're planned." Things don't just happen to us who love God. They're planned by his own dear hand. They're molded and shaped and timed by his clock. Things don't just happen, they're planned. We just don't guess on the issues of life. We Christians just rest in our Lord. We are directed by his sovereign will in the light of his holy word. We who love Jesus are walking by faith, not seeing one step that's ahead, not doubting one moment what our lot might be, but looking to Jesus instead. We praise our dear Savior for loving us so, for planning each care of our life, then giving us faith to trust him for all, the blessing as well as the strife. Things don't just happen to us who love God, to us that have taken our stand, no matter the lot, the course, or the price. Things don't just happen, they're planned.